Hello and welcome back to the Catch Yourself On podcast. I'm your host, Rosie, and this week we are talking all about emojis. Can emojis improve our communication? Is there a place for emojis in a professional context? And are emojis a universal language? All that and more in this week's episode on emojis and communication and misunderstandings. It's a really fun one and I hope that you enjoy. Emojis are defined as digital images that are added to messages in electronic communication. They are adopted in messages to represent feelings, things, and studies in psychology are showing that emojis are creating a new language for a new generation. The emoji started off as a colon hyphen close bracket, like the smiley face, and then more text-based expressions emerged. You may be interested to hear that some of the most popular emojis are the face with tears of joy, loudly crying face, the red heart, the rolling on the floor laughing, the folded hands, and sparkles actually, which I was quite surprised at. And people use emojis for a whole bunch of different reasons, as we'll go on to talk about in the episode. I am delighted to be joined by Dr. Monica Riordan from Chatham University, whose research focuses on constructing and interpreting meaning in computer-mediated communication, like instant messages and emails. She has published a lot of papers on the complexity of communicating emotion with emojis, how using emojis affects our perceptions of others, as well as how emojis can convey things like affect and ambiguity. There is a lot to take in this interview, so without further ado, I hope that you enjoy my conversation with Dr. Monica Riordan. Thank you so much, Monica, for joining me today to talk all about emojis. I find it, as we were saying, really interesting and really fun. And one of the most popular uses of emojis I was reading is about like adjusting tone. So making a message less serious, a bit more friendly, softening the impact of something maybe a bit more negative. So how do you most commonly see people using emojis, Monica?
First, it's very important to understand that verbal cues and nonverbal cues are different forms of communicating, and both are necessary for the success of a communication. So you can think of it this way. If you are looking at a person and they have their arms crossed and, you know, they've got a frown on their face and you say, "Are you okay?" And they go, "I'm fine." In that context, the body language is contradictory to the words they are actually speaking. And you have to decide what you're going to pay attention to. Are you going to pay attention to the words they're speaking, the verbal part of that language, or are you going to pay attention to the nonverbal cues that are being given to you? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of research that suggests that we consider things like facial expression and body language to be a lot more honest than the words that we speak. So what that means is that your nonverbal cues generally hold a lot more weight in communication than verbal cues do. But now consider this when you are texting someone. All right. So you text someone that you know somebody's having a hard time. Okay. And you text them, "Are you okay?" And they text back, "I'm fine." Well, you don't have any nonverbal cues there. All you have are the words that are written on the phone, the screen phone. Right. And so, well, what do you do with that? Do you take them at their word? Do you press for more information? Do you just sort of let it go and think they're being honest with you? We need to somehow imbue our communications with those nonverbal cues in some way. Mm. And we found a lot of different ways to do this. So I found this really great study in 2018 where the researchers posed basically the same kind of question I had, where a person responded, "I'm fine." And that particular text either had a period at the end of it or it didn't. Mm-hmm. And what they found is that if the period is there, then the person receiving the message is far more likely to assume the writer is not fine, okay? So the period made that response seem too aggressive. It made it seem like the person was not fine. Mm. So a period now has like a tone of voice, yeah. All right? So periods make text seem more negative, seem more abrupt. It's gained meaning as a substitution for missing nonverbal cues like facial expression or tone of voice. So basically, we've adapted our use and our comprehension of language to a new format. We're adding meaning to linguistic and paralinguistic elements that didn't have these meanings before. We are evolving in our use of communication to fit the constraints of the online platforms in order to be able to increase our odds of successful communication. And that's where these things like writing in boldface or misspelling things deliberately or writing in all capital letters or adding emojis and emoticons and GIFs and memes and all these other things have sort of created their own space.
Yeah, no, and thinking about how, as you say, Monica, emojis improve our communication, like how people use them and harness them to express themselves better and become better communicators. I think that's really interesting. Like, as you say, perhaps emojis give more space for nuance, tone, and considering so much of the meaning from our language comes from those nonverbal cues, emojis kind of add personality.
They aren't only used to communicate things like emotions. Right. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we use them to communicate emotions, to show them, you know, like I'm fine with the happy face emoji. You're saying, yeah, you know, I really am fine. It's okay. You don't have to worry about me. I've got a happy face emoji at the end of this. There can also be other reasons why you might do that. Mm-hmm. So, for example, one of the reasons we might use emojis is for something called emotion work, mm-hmm, where I might not actually be fine, but I'm going to put that little smiley face emoji to convince you that I'm fine so that you don't worry. Mm. So there's a communicative function of that I'm using the emoji in order to communicate something that is not necessarily true, mm-hmm, in order to make sure that you have some sort of behavioral or emotional outcome. That is that you don't worry about me, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, rather than it being an actual depiction of how I really feel. So mm-hmm, oftentimes people think about emojis as I'm going to show them that I'm happy. I'm going to show them that I'm sad and all these other things, but they're not real depictions
of
facial expression. So there's a difference between the facial expressions that you show people when you're actually talking to them face to face and then the emojis that you're using when you're communicating online. They're not the same.
Yeah. That's such an interesting angle to explore, because I was reading that apparently like 72% of 18 to 25 year olds feel like it's easier to express themselves through using emojis, and they feel like they can express themselves better. But then like, how far is it like authentic communication? Like, yeah, is it really improving our communication, if that makes sense?
It's a different form of communicating. Like, there are things that we feel more comfortable communicating online. We don't want to see people cry when they tell them bad news or something like that. So it's the same reason why sometimes people will break up with you via text message.
Yeah. So
we use different ways of communicating for different purposes in many different times. And so I wouldn't say that face-to-face communication and online communication are necessarily comparable in any way. Mm-hmm. And I'm not totally sure that there's any sort of relationship between the facial expressions that you would display to someone in person and the emojis that you would actually use in a conversation that takes place.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's like a place for emojis, and yeah, not restricting them and saying like whether they improve or whether, because a lot of people want to jump on and be like, it's the case that emojis are making us illiterate. Like, what has it done for written language? Especially what you were saying about deliberately misspelling words. Cause I thought, yeah, I guess when I'm typing, I am like deliberately misspelling them, but that's just quite like a, that's kind of a funny way to put it.
Like, I mean, it's the difference between saying I had a long day and I had a long day. Right? A whole bunch of O's in that text message. It changes the perception of the message itself.
Yeah.
And so we do that. We use vocal tone in these messages instead of just writing out the words themselves.
Yeah. The other emotion, which I think is particularly interesting with emojis, is like irony and sarcasm. Because like, you know, the upside down smiley face and stuff, I feel like people use that quite a lot, or like rolling their eyes, and the use of emojis for sarcastic like connotations is quite interesting.
It is. And any time where you want people to actually understand the opposite of what it is that you're really saying. So yeah, it's like, what a great day outside it is. And then, you know, that little opposite emoji will tell you that I'm being sarcastic. It's interesting that we have to do that, because in when you're face to face, you can easily tell from the nonverbal cues or from the situation that you're the context that I am being ironic, but we have to somehow figure out how to do that.
Yeah, and cycling back earlier to what we were saying about like whether emojis are making us like quote unquote dumber, what do you say to people when they pose that to you, Monica?
I don't think it's making us dumber. I think we are creating a new way of communicating what we need in order to have a successful communication. Mm-hmm. But we have a platform in which we are communicating that is by its very nature more restricted. So we had created many different sophisticated ways of expressing ourselves.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes because it's such a new way of learning how to communicate the way we feel, the way we think, all these other things, that there is a lot of potential for miscommunication.
Yes, and misunderstanding.
When you think about in like all of human evolution, right, we have learned how to communicate face to face. It is second nature to us. We do it since birth. Our brains are actually structured for us to communicate that way. Mm-hmm. So when you add this whole new technological marvel that has come out only in the last, 30, 35 years or so, mm-hmm. that we've really come out and started communicating via computers, this is still a brand new page. And our brains weren't built to handle this kind of information. So we're not getting dumber. What we're doing is we are learning to adapt our communicative style to the types of platforms that we are currently working with. Mm-hmm. And because we didn't evolve to be able to understand this sort of thing very easily, mm-hmm. the potential for miscommunication is high, and it leads to debates, I guess you can say, on whether we are actually getting worse at communicating as a result. But I don't think we're getting worse. We're learning to adapt to the platforms as they are created. And we're, like anybody learning new skills, we are making mistakes along the way.
Mm-hmm. You articulated that so well. It's just different. It's just a different way of communicating. And again, like, totally dependent on context and unique situations. And when you said about like miscommunication, it made me think about how emojis do lead to undesirable like misunderstandings. And apparently like 40% of emojis, when two people look at them, they mean different things to the two people. The folded hands emoji that people always think is like a prayer, and apparently it's a thank you, I don't even know what it is. And like the one of a grimace, and then people think it's like a grin. I had one of my friends sending that all the time, the clenched jaw, and she thought she was like smiling, and she would be like looking forward to it with the tense face and didn't know what it meant.
There's a lot of what researchers call semiotic transition, which basically means that the meaning of an emoji can be very fluid.
Depend
on lots of different contexts. So one good example of this is the peach emoji, right? So the peach emoji to a lot of people is a sexual symbol, all right? Mm. Symbolizes a butt, if I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah.
So the peach emoji can be a sexual symbol symbolizing a butt, and it's used often in sexual situations.
Yeah. But
over here in the United States, somewhere around 2019, people started using the peach as a symbol of support for impeaching President Trump. And so Twitter users would tweet it out in support of impeachment. And some users actually were calling for a peach that had what we call the Trump hairstyle on it, just to make it fairly obvious what the meaning, what that was. But I bring this up because the social and political movements that have taken place in the United States have actually changed the nature of the interpretation of that emoji. And that's what we call semiotic transition. It means that as society goes through social and political changes, emojis can actually take on new and different meanings as symbols of strength, resistance, power, social roles, social groups, personal identities, and meanings that will ebb and flow with time. Like, I haven't seen people use a peach emoji in at least a few months here. Now that President Trump is no longer in office, it's not really being used for that purpose anymore. It's gone back to being a sex symbol.
That's so interesting. How like the meaning is so fluid. And it makes me think as well about like obviously different cultural landscapes and how culture shapes emojis, like how emojis can't be lost in translation.
That's true. There's a lot of cultural differences. So for in the United States, the emoji where you cross your fingers generally means good luck, or you're hoping for something good to happen. In Vietnam, it's actually similar to giving somebody the middle finger.
Oh, right. Good to know.
And I know the thumbs up emoji in the United States means okay, or that's good. But in the Middle East and Africa, it basically, you know, stands for up yours, right? Again, it's akin to flipping someone off. So there are cultural differences in how we interpret these, especially when it comes to the hand gesture emojis.
Yeah. And also, Monica, what you were saying about like social change, emojis in some way map on to that social change. Like the face mask emoji could be like a way to encourage behavior change and encourage people to wear face masks as part of COVID-19 recovery phase.
Yes. So are you familiar with how emojis are actually created, like the whole process of getting an emoji on a phone?
You could walk me through it.
Okay. So every character that you type on your computer has a code, and these codes are universal. So that means it allows you, whatever you wrote, to leave your computer and be accurately rendered on a different computer, even if that computer is not running the same platform as yours.
Yeah.
That's what we call Unicode. It's a universal code. So in this way, all characters and digits and symbols in every language can be clearly communicated across all different platforms, regardless of the company that created the software, the computer the software is running on. So in order for emojis to be communicated across Apple and Android and Samsung and any number of other platforms, they have to have a code assigned to them too. And that code is assigned by a group of people who are collectively called the Unicode Consortium.
Oh, I have heard of this guy, yeah.
So if you want an emoji created, or any computer character for that matter, you have to petition the Unicode Consortium to have a code assigned to it before the developer can create for a platform. Anyone from the public can petition the Unicode Consortium for an emoji. But in this petition, the expected usage level of the proposed emoji is outlined, as well as the diversity of its possible use. And then if the Unicode Consortium believes that the emoji will have broad appeal, then they will approve the proposal and they will assign an emoji a code.
Interesting. Okay, so
what that means is that emojis are developed based on their potential to be what we call an ideogram, meaning they can represent lots of different ideas. They have different meanings in different ways to lots of different people. One of the latest ones I saw was a petition for a polar bear emoji. So first off, you would say, okay, people love polar bears, but it also has a number of other ways that you can use it. It can be used for charity purposes, like the annual polar bear splash or polar bear run or different things like that. There are business purposes, like global businesses like Minecraft and Coca-Cola. There's marketing campaigns for zoos or animal sanctuaries. It can be used as a symbol for Canada or some other northern country. It can be used as a symbol for climate change. It has all sorts of possible functions, right? So there's a clear argument for how widespread and global its appeal would be, how much potential it has in ideogram. So the obvious outcome of this process is that emojis are expressly selected for their potential to convey multiple meanings. That's there's no one meaning to any given emoji.
Yeah, because I guess what's the point in having one emoji if it has this really niche sort of use case? Because ultimately the aim is for it to be used in as many differing contexts as possible. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It also means, however, that there's a group of people who get to decide what is and is not going to be an emoji on our phone, which of course has a whole bunch of other repercussions.
Yeah, true. Like all the power dynamic in that.
For, like you were saying, the mask emoji. Well, depending on what sort of political background the people in that Unicode Consortium group might have, that may or may not have gotten approved. Obviously, it did. But we don't know to what extent there may have been an argument over that.
Interesting.
Period product emojis, menstrual product emojis that I know have gone through this process where it's more of, well, do we want that sort of thing on there? Is it too rude, I guess you could say? Isn't it appropriate emoji? And there are a lot of people who would say this is a product that half the population of the world uses. Yes, it would be an appropriate emoji. And then there are other people who say, no, it's a completely inappropriate thing to put on there. So there are all these discussions about what is and is not appropriate. And it affects a lot of us because it lends cachet to some of these ideas. So for example, many of the different racial groups, different gender groups, they looked for representation in the emojis for a very long time. And they made strides in that particular realm. But we have to remember that this all goes through a small group of people called the Unicode Consortium, who control what these emojis are going to be. And sometimes it becomes a very political or social decision in a way.
Yeah, no, it's really important that you brought that up, actually, Monica. It's like, who decides what emojis we get to use and how does that affect the cultural trends? How does that generate trends? Like, not even mapping onto it. It's like literally generating them.
And it matters a great deal. Like one of the emojis that's come up quite considerably in the past year or two in the United States is the raised fist emoji. The one like
this. Oh yeah, I really like that one.
It's that symbol of the resistance. Mm. But what's interesting is that it comes in different, what we call skin modifier colors.
Mm. Right?
And you will find that it's used in the dark brown skin color six times more often than the light skinned color. It's very clearly a symbol of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
But interestingly, if you use the light skinned raised fist emoji, it's actually a symbol of more of a white power. So even if you are a light skinned person, you shouldn't use the light skinned fist emoji because of what it has come to symbolize.
It ties so much into identity. The other thing that I wanted to touch on, which I know that you've done a lot of work on this, is the context of the workplace. So like the task-oriented use of emojis and job context, because I know like a lot of companies are now using emojis in their marketing so that their marketing stands out. And like, I guess that's kind of obvious. But also like employees using emojis at work. I think that's quite interesting because it was reported that they were like really hesitant at first because they thought it was unprofessional. And there was this stereotype that using emojis would make you look less competent. And then I think they were saying, like, if your boss uses emojis, you were writing about whether it makes senior leaders more likable and that kind of thing. It's really interesting.
So the interesting thing about emojis is that we use them to create perceptions of who the people are who send them. And this is especially true now that we are currently working in a world where so many of us are working from home and we might not know much about the people that we're working with. We don't meet them in person. We don't know what they look like. And so we're trying to figure out who people are and how to communicate with them through the kinds of communications that we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're parsing their communications for clues. And it seems like it heavily depends on the kind of workplace that you are in, whether it is a formal one. So I'm thinking of more like a law office versus if you are at, I'm thinking of a more informal business. So the nature of the communications would be different.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of perception that you want to give off to your clients or to other people that you're working with would be different. So for example, I work as a teacher. When I am communicating with the chair of my department or the university president, I don't use emojis. I'm far more formal because it's a more formal business relationship.
Yeah.
When I'm communicating with my students, I want to appear approachable. I want to be able to be likable. And so I'm more likely to use emojis or GIFs or memes or something to give them that perception, that impression.
Yeah.
So we're using emojis to create a particular impression on others.
Yeah.
And this may or may not be the impression that you want to make in the workplace, depending on the kind of workplace that you have.
And you know, also like you're saying about your role of authority in the example with your students, because obviously you've got kind of the power in that relationship. So it's kind of interesting because you're not only giving them like the perception of the impression, but in some ways you're also giving them the permission, because then they're going to be more likely to respond back to you with emojis. So it kind of works both ways because you've earned their trust.
I would agree. Yes. I feel I have a very biased impression of workplace communication simply because people know I'm what you call the emoji lady. And so they'll send me emojis all the time. When I ask other people about their workplace communication, they spend a lot of time thinking about the intended tone of the message and the intended impression that they're going to give and how it does affect the behavioral response, the reaction that they get. If I need a student to do something for me, I could go with a more likable sort of email, like, hey, can you do me this favor? Smiley faces, yada, yada. But at the same time, if I need a student to do something for me, I might also go with, you need to be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't give the emoji at the end.
Mm-hmm. So
in both cases, I'm likely to get a different reaction, a different response, and within a different amount of time, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So you're creating a different impression depending on the message and how you write that message and whether you include an emoji or not.
Yeah, how you write it, and also like what platform it's through. I feel like email, for example, the use of emojis in email is a particularly interesting one, because I think a lot of people view emails with emojis as less competent, but maybe on Teams, Messenger, for example, emojis are a bit more acceptable.
With instant messaging, text messaging, that sort of stuff in general, I think by nature the platform is less formal and it's much more interactive. The back and forth is much more continuous. It's much more synchronous.
Yeah.
Versus email is one of those things where I feel you send a message and it's like a full-on letter. Yeah. It's different from like, you know, just, hey, what's up? You know, you don't send an email saying, hey, what's up? You send an email. That's like a letter, right? Where you have a particular purpose and the thing that you want to say.
Yeah.
And it's a much more formal method of communicating. So yes, the platform, I think, does matter a great deal in how you actually use these different paralinguistic cues.
And to circle back, Monica, to what you were saying about your students, it's like that idea of like how you make them feel. And I know you've also done a lot of work on emojis and affect and how the emoji like lands with the person and kind of like the physical reaction that gives them, I guess, like that bodily experience almost.
It's true. I work in a particular area where the way people think about me matters a great deal. Student evaluations are actually used quite a bit in terms of promotion and raises and other things like that. So I am invested in appearing approachable and likable.
Yeah.
And so, for example, I might give feedback on a student paper. Let's say the student paper was absolutely awful, and I'm going to give feedback and I'm going to say, this was not your best work. Smiling emoji. When you add the smile emoji, people are less likely to have negative feelings about it.
Yeah.
Or if you say, I'm very confused by this particular paragraph, and then like a confused emoji, the emoji sort of softens the I'm confused about this. So I try not to use them too heavily, though. I do think it's like too childish to use them too much. But in terms of managing the negativity of comments, especially when I'm giving negative feedback, I will use emojis to manage the negativity on the part of the student. I want them to feel like I'm pointing things out for their own benefit so that they can get better, instead of just simply outright criticizing their work. And I think it really does make a better impression, although I don't exactly have data to back that up, but I'm pretty sure it does.
Yeah, no, it's quite interesting because I'm now thinking about feedback I've ever received, and if there is like negative, and then at the end it's like, but overall good job, smiley face. You're like, so funny.
Manage the outrage. It becomes very
strategic in a way.
Like you're critiquing people, but you have to make sure that they don't feel too negative about it, because you have to continue to work with this person.
That's true. And I was going to say, also in your field of academia, it's quite interesting, that idea of like competency, because among different peers and colleagues, and it's interesting how everyone has an emoji style, don't they, as well. Like I have some colleagues even my age, and they don't seem to use emojis a lot. They would use a lot of full stops, and like that's their style, and you get used to that.
Emojis are very pervasive in social media. I think the latest data to come out of Twitter was that like 1 in 5 tweets contains an emoji, and Instagram released data showing that almost half of all Instagram posts contain emojis and other things like that. But what was so interesting to me about it is that the laughing with tears of joy emoji was far and away the most used emoji on Twitter, or on most forms of social media, I think.
And
I don't know about you, but I've probably only seen about 2 people in my entire life laugh so hard that they cried. This is not a common facial expression. And so I don't use that one. I think it's hyperbole. It's an over-exaggeration to the point where it's almost comical.
Like,
there's no way to go up from there. Like, that's the epitome of hilariousness.
There.
So I feel like it should be used very rarely.
Yeah, because it does seem quite intense, to be fair.
It's an extremely intense emotion, but yet people use this all the time. And number of people use this emoji all the time, far and away the most used emoji, and it almost dilutes the meaning of it.
Yeah it does. That's so funny. I never thought about it like that before, but
my husband likes to tell dad jokes. And so he sent a friend of his a dad joke that he thought was hilarious. I told him it's not funny, He sent it in a text message to someone else to find out if they thought it would be funny. And that person sent back the laughing with tears of joy emoji. And he's like, see, it's funny. And I said, I guarantee you, they read that text message and they rolled their eyes, but they didn't want to hurt your feelings. So they sent back the laughing with tears of joy emoji. I guarantee it. It is all pure emotion work.
That's so funny. You're
just preserving and maintaining a social relationship. It has nothing to do with people's actual feelings in the situation.
That's so funny. I feel like actually now that I think about it, some people will respond. I'm like, that's happened to me. No, but like some people will respond with just that emoji. And yeah, when they don't know what to say, and it's just like that emoji three times. And you're like, is it really that funny though?
It's not that funny. I guarantee you it is not that funny at all. I guarantee you that person either just doesn't know what to say, so yep, they just send an emoji in response, or they're really rolling their eyes, but they want to make you feel good about yourself, so they're sending the laughing with tears of joy emoji. But whatever the reason they sent it, I guarantee you, I will place money on this, they are not laughing with tears of joy running down their face.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, I would place money on it too, to be fair. What do you think then, Monica, is the future of emojis?
I think emojis are here to stay, but I also think that because this is such a new and different way of communicating, we are learning how to develop more and different communicative devices. GIFs have come out, we've got memes, and we now have menus for these things on our phone, just like emoji menus. We have meme menus. And these all serve other purposes as well. So remember, we talked about the Unicode Consortium being in control of all these emojis. Mm. And we also talked about how sometimes these emojis take on all kinds of meanings that we don't really all understand all of them. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to use a peach and you're like, well, I don't want them to misinterpret it. Mm-hmm. So that's where you might find a GIF, or you might find a meme, or you might use stickers. Stickers are also another one where they allow you to customize what it is that you want to use, where it's not governed by the Unicode Consortium as to what you can and cannot use. Mm. We have Bitmojis, we have Animojis, we have all sorts of ways of expressing ourselves. We can now download customized emoji menus. Mm. So I think there's a couple of different television shows that have their own customized emojis. I know the MLS, the Major League Soccer, has their own customized emojis that you can use for different teams. Mm. Wow. But you can download these as methods of self-presentation or self-expression, mm-hmm, and different things like that. So right now, I think the thing that we find most common and easiest and convenient to use are the emojis that the Unicode Consortium has put out there.
Yeah.
But there are so many different options available to us, and many of them are increasing in use.
Yeah.
Well, I think at some point we're going to become somewhat overwhelmed with the sheer number of ways of expressing humor in a text message, and it'll sort itself out. So remember, we're still adapting.
We're still creating
different methods to try to express ourselves, and we're still adapting and figuring things out. But another 30 years from now, I think we'll settle into what it is that we're going to use here. And I think we will still have different emoji styles in the same way that we have different ways of speaking and different ways of expressing ourselves and different gestures that we use all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm a very gesture person. I don't know if you
know. So am I. It's really embarrassing. Sometimes I look at myself and I'm like, put your hands down. It's embarrassing. Oh dear. I'm glad you are as well, because it's nothing's worse than when you're sitting with someone who literally doesn't move the entire time. Oh dear.
Something we do. We're all gonna have a style.
And your style changes over time. Like even your emoji style changes. Like when you're younger, there's different emojis you use, and yeah, you gravitate towards different emojis. Sometimes you get really into one emoji and you're like, I love this new emoji. It's interesting.
My favorite one is the one where it's holding its chin like it's thinking.
Oh really?
I love that emoji. Some people say something, I'm like, I don't think that's true.
That's so funny. Yeah, and some people have bad experiences with them. My sister, like, there's this one which she hates because it was always just used at work by her boss, and she found it really passive aggressive, and now she's like, I can never use it ever. That's so funny. I really hope that you enjoyed that conversation. I thought it was a really fun one. But also, when we talk about emojis and social change and how things can be lost in translation, it's also super relevant. Like, it's really important
Like, emojis are a bit more than a lighthearted, fun topic. And as we discussed, communication is central to what it means to be human. Whether it be pandemic, disagreement, politics, all these things can be mediated through emojis. And emojis, as we say, generate trends. It's really important to remember how this is linked to ideas of power and authority. And I think this episode really showed the complexity of communicating emotion with emojis, but also how emojis are a really powerful tool and an empowering tool as well. So maybe next time you go to click on emoji in your keyboard, you'll think a bit more about the broader meaning behind it. That is everything for this week's episode of the Catch Yourself On podcast. Thank you so much to Monica for sharing in this conversation with me. I learned so much and I really enjoyed that. Thank you to Joe and James for composing the music to the podcast. And as always, check out the Instagram page, which is linked in the show notes, if you want to get involved in further conversation on episodes in between the weeks. Wishing everyone a beautiful week ahead and looking forward to speaking into your ears again soon. Until next time, bye!